Off the Ball, GAA.
Well, we are talking about it, like, well, you're not talking about the incident, you're talking about the fact that, well, that out of 50 people, you're finger pointing me, is that what you're saying?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Power Rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA.
Okay, welcome along to the Football Power Rankings, your guide to the Football Power Rankings as always, and there's lots to get into this week with the notorious Tommy Rooney. How are you doing, Tommy?
First time I've been called notorious. Hi, Michael. Hi, Matthew.
Hi, Tommy.
Matthew Brennan, also here with us.
Yep, I'm here.
Less Westmead talk this week by a factor of 96. We'll still give him 10 minutes and that'll still be true.
Yep.
But anyway, everybody doing well? It was a busy, sunny weekend of football. And more to come this weekend. Before we move on, though, if you do have any gripe with Tommy's selections once we get to them, and again, there is a lot of changes, please just get
a lot of gripes.
A lot of people have a lot of gripes these days, don't they, Tommy? Yeah. Please get in touch with us on the Off the Ball WhatsApp 087-9180-180 or email us enter@offtheball.com and let us know who you would change and why. Harvey Norman have very kindly given us 3 pairs of tickets for this weekend's games in Croke Park. That's Dublin and Louth in the All-Ireland Championship and Leitrim and Longford in the Tailteann Cup. So 3 pairs of tickets to give away for those games. With thanks to Harvey Norman, just get in touch with what you would change from Tommy's selections. Tommy, before we get to the rankings, right, obviously there was a bit of an incident at half-time in Killarney on Saturday, and we're going to get to our Hawkeye. We normally leave this to last and don't have enough time to talk about it, but if we get to our Hawkeye moment of the week, which is the close call everybody's talking about, and I suppose it's a close call as to what's going to happen after the schmozzle and melee and brawl that happened at half-time in Killarney. We don't want to go into it all that too much, but I suppose there are some bits that probably haven't been talked about all that much. We talked about the incidents of who got involved and why and all, but what's going to happen?
It's very hard to know what's going to happen in the aftermath of this. There's a bit of breaking news just hot off the press in the Irish Times. Gordon Manning has it that Jim McGuinness, Dermot O'Connor incident understood not to be mentioned in Sean Herson's report, the referee's report. Wow. But the CCCC could yet pursue disciplinary action. So I'll just give you this while we have it. The incident between McGuinness and O'Connor at halftime is not directly mentioned in referee Sean Herson's report. If McGuinness was reported by Herson for a Category 5A 2 offence, any type of physical interference with an opposing player or team official, then the minimum penalty would have been a 12-week suspension. So we've all been kind of waiting to hear what the fallout from the report would be. It isn't the end-all and be-all, though. And, you know, the CCC have the option to look at video evidence, but the video evidence that we've seen, and I've seen throughout, seems to have somebody in between, you know? All anyone can say is it appears like Jim McGuinness put his hands on Dermot O'Connor. So,
yeah. Now, in fairness, there's lots of other people involved as well, like, plenty of them are not players, you know, and I think that's the biggest issue for me. It's almost like we should, for me anyway, I'd like to nearly take the Jim McGuinness situation out of it a tiny bit, and just because I think it's a wider discussion than Jim getting hot and bothered or a really high profile manager getting a ban, right? This is like, when that happens, before McGuinness even gets involved, and I have to say, even live, I didn't really notice his part in it. But all I can think of is, like, this has been escalated by a load of lads in bibs who are, like, togged out and wearing football boots, running onto the pitch and getting involved in something that's nothing to do with them. And I do wonder if, like, we need, like, for all the given out about the Ger Brennan suspension and maybe it's a little bit disproportionate and so on, something needs to stamp out people kind of coming on and making these things way worse. Because if a player gets involved, and Paddy Andrews spoke very well about this in the football pod, I thought, earlier in the week, but if a player is getting involved, so be it. The blood's up. There's so many people on the sideline. And again, the reason I mentioned them being togged out and in boots and stuff like that is, like, you know, in that moment, they've all played football. Some of them have done it very recently. Some of them probably even still do. You don't even, your blood's up. You're not really out of it. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, Do all of these people need to be on the sideline? Do you know what I mean? I understand if intercounty teams want to spend an unbelievable amount of money on having 30 people in their backroom team, that's up to them. That's fine. That's something. But they don't all need to be on the sideline in these small, tight pitches, getting involved in things, running out onto the pitch. There should be an absolute maximum number of people between subs and backroom staff that are allowed out into the on-pitch area or the side of the pitch area.
100%. And it was a circus, you know, at halftime. It was carnage. And we were all waiting to see how Sean Hurston would deal with it afterwards. And, like, I think he probably did as well as he could have done, given what happened. How they had eyes on Micheál Burns giving the rabbit punch uppercut to Ryan McHugh, I don't know. But it was incredibly impressive that they caught that, because there was so much going on. But the point you're making, and the point that Paddy made very well, I think he described them as effing heroes coming flying in off the sideline. Like, we just got to get rid of that, lads. And Mick, you're so right. We love this sport. We love the GAA. We're all so passionate about it. We all care so much. We lose the run of ourselves. We get hot and bothered. And that's just supporters or people on the outside watching in. When you are a part of a group and part of a team, and you see, like, you see somebody who you've coached since is 18 years of age getting split open right in front of you. And I can imagine Jim McGuinness was more than likely running on to try and get his players out of there or to try and get things moving. And right in front of him, he sees Ryan McHugh covered in blood. And fair enough, he picks out the wrong man and he, you know, goes after finger pointing, which is kind of what he said I did to him, but finger pointing at Dermot O'Connor, trying to point out that O'Connor did it. And I think he just got caught up in the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, the genesis of my question, I'm not going to spend myself here, but the genesis of my question is, like, after what we saw happen to Ger Brennan, like, are you worried, like?
Yeah.
So, it was. I do think the Brennan suspension, it is, if you look at it game for game, blow for blow, it is possibly, on history, the most penal suspension that has ever been dealt out, you know, in terms of proportion. But this is something that was voted through by 98% of delegates at Congress 3 years ago. So you can be damn sure that the Dublin delegate and the Donegal delegate all voted yes, unless one of them was practicing if the no button was working at the time. So everyone voted it through. So, you know, and the reason they voted it through, Mick, is the exact point that you're making. We got to clean up the sidelines because, oh, fair enough, it happens in an intercounty game and we're all engrossed in it. And there's a bit of us that love the madness and the voyeuristic nature of all this. And we're looking at it and we're enthralled and we're engrossed. But that happens at club level.
In a very serious way sometimes.
And it's a mess.
There was winter alone did we get? And they're only the ones that you're getting on video. You know,
and it goes way over the line. Yeah. And it goes way over the line. And there aren't cameras there. And there's way more damage done. And, like, we have a copycat culture in the GA. There's no getting away from it. And the intercounty game spills into the club game. And I would imagine that is one of the main reasons why they're trying to stamp this out.
Just as far as the intercounty game spilling into the club game, I suppose when something like this happens, to eliminate it from happening in the club game as much as possible, you have to stamp it out at the top level, because then it's as visible as possible.
Yeah.
And more people will become aware of the fact that if I go and do something like this, everyone is going to be punished for it to the same degree.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Look, the only time I ever ran onto a pitch in anger, I was wrestled to the ground into the muddy ground by my uncle, whose words exactly to you were, "You'll get the whole effing club banned," right? But I always remember, like, that's the thing that's going to stop it,
yeah,
is that threat, because his actual concern about my anger and what I would do, which was nothing, but he didn't know that, wasn't the problem. It was the idea that I'd get the club banned.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's, I always think that's the key thing, is to have that threat hanging over. Like, and if that threat isn't real, then, you know.
But Mick, like, Michael, the manager of the biggest county.
This is a serious fight.
It's like when your mother calls you by your full name.
the manager, what's your middle name? The manager of the biggest county in the country got banned for 12 weeks. Like.
I know.
Got banned for 12 weeks.
It needs to happen just a couple of times, like, so that we know that he wasn't just being made an example of, and then you move on, like,
And, you know, people are saying that you know, there were different incidents. Obviously, you know, a wet willy, as James O'Donoghue described it, or pulling the earpiece out of Keane Branagh McGinn and, you know, him falling over. It was different in that regard, but ultimately there isn't, in the eyes of the rule book, much difference between a team official coming on and doing that. And that's where this is. And, gee, like, I absolutely hope I have the chance to put a microphone in front of Jim McGuinness's face later this summer and that he's not banned, because he'd be some loss to the championship.
And you might, and not, because you might be banned. Did you ever think of that?
I doubt that'll happen. I was only doing my job.
I know that. Well, look, I mean, plenty of people have only done their jobs in the past, Tommy, but we won't get into that today, because that's not the Hawkeye moment of the week. The Hawkeye moment of the week is something else.
Are you sure?
No, the Hawkeye moment of the week was basically like what's going to happen next. And I do think there's a couple of questions there. One being, like, David Clifford, I think, has to probably be looking anxiously at CCCC reports. And I think also you... Because like I do think he was... The Donegal people went mad twice. And the first time, it was the second time, there was a nothing thing that led to the melee. But it was because the first time he did throw an elbow.
Yeah, he threw a shoulder that connected very high. The arm went up, absolutely. Yeah, he threw
more than the Cork player did to get sent off against me.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like...
We will.
Oh yeah, like Conor O'Callaghan, you judge it off some of the high elbows and the... high shoulders and high tackles in the Donegal Kerry game. Conor O'Callaghan was so harshly treated. I'd say the drawing of blood is what did him there, probably.
I have RTE here have gone further than the Irish Times in your mentioning, and obviously this renders a lot of this conversation obsolete, but there will be no further suspensions arising out of incidents between Donegal and Kerry Football Championship match last weekend. RTE Sport understands the CCCC are understood to have ruled that all incidents were dealt with on the pitch by referee Sean Herson. Both counties are to face fines resulting from their behaviour at the halftime whistle and their late return to the pitch, just as important. And there you go. So both counties have been informed, so there will be no more suspensions. I don't think it actually renders the conversation obsolete, but the speculation certainly does. It's interesting. You thought, obviously, Micheál Burns will be outside of that, because that would be dealt with as a red card. Question marks over that as well, in that was that seen by match officials at the time, or was it seen at halftime on a phone?
Monitor or something?
Yeah.
It's hard to know, but like, let's just linger on this for a moment. The manner in which Sean Herson handled that circus is obviously exemplary. Like, so he obviously sent off a player, booked another, and spoke to the managers, cleared the sidelines. So
the clear the sidelines, I thought, was brilliant referee.
Was, yeah.
Like, and that shows he knows what the bloody problem was as well. Like,
yeah.
So, do you know what? We're not going to lose Jim McGuinness for 12 weeks. I think that's a really positive thing. And it means that my number one in the power rankings this week will probably be staying there for quite a while.
Oh, we're not getting to that for a while, because I was going to say, like, this isn't the most important thing. And the reason I wanted to get it, like, there was loads of really great football, and we'll get to it. I just want to talk about it because I do think that, like, what comes out of this is actually defining of, like, that close call. Because I kind of tend to be okay with this decision. But I can see why people would be adamant that you should be banning people for a long time and clearing the game up in the way we're talking about. So I do think it actually defines close call.
Yeah.
Because I really don't know what the best option is. And one thing I'd say about you saying about Jim reacting to Ryan McHugh being covered in his own blood and, like, you know, seeing red in that regard, and to be completely understandable. A lot of the Mayor Ishkas who were involved that I was talking about at the start happened long before Ryan McHugh was covered in blood.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? There was a lot of people involved, not Jim McGuinness, but a lot of people who shouldn't have been involved, from both teams, by the way. This isn't a Donegal thing. From both Kerry and Donegal, that shouldn't have been anywhere near the pitch, pushing and shoving. And it all, look, it started because Donegal were annoyed about Clifford throwing his weight around.
Yeah, and it's,
for a very fair challenge, yeah. I would have said the second time, to be honest.
Yeah, and there's always the thing when you're growing up playing football, the first thing you're told as a team is... the third man in is the one who's going to get punished, you know, when there's an incident between two players, which there obviously was, and then there's three or four lads running from the other end of the pitch to get involved. It's always going to escalate, but as you say, it just comes back to the initial point. I think the idea of people coming in off the line is, it just needs to be find a way to get rid of that. But again, I don't know if punishing Jim McGuinness for 12 weeks is the way to get rid of that. I'm not sure it is. And as you say, Sean Herson getting everyone off the line when he did, and having the kind of presence of mind to go and do that should absolutely be commended. But although we're not going to get any more suspensions or bans or action off the back of this, outside of the Micheál Burns thing, of course, which is already part of it, I don't think it's the end of this kind of storyline, whether yeah. it involves these teams again, I don't know, but it'll definitely be referenced again.
Oh, I do think so. I think if they meet again later in the championship, this is a huge, huge moment, as well as the three results they've had this year since the All-Ireland final. Micheál Burns should get three games, I think, shouldn't he? Whatever about his overall character and whether or not like this is him and so on, like what he did in the moment was completely and utterly unacceptable. Like, you know,
way over the line. And there's a lot of bloody grandstanding and trying to hold your ground or grabbing jerseys and pushing it in this game. And I was sort of wondering, should it have been dealt with before the throw-in when Murphy comes in and he's met by Morley and Foley, and then they forget Murphy's there and he goes in and actually chases the breaking ball in the zone with no one marking him. It was absolute madness. That game. And like, there was another incident where Murphy comes in for a tackle on the sideline and Morley's claiming it was a close fist and it wasn't. It was pantomime stuff, but it was brilliant as well. And we do want to see that. But the one thing I would say from this weekend is I'm sure one of the most interesting post-match interviews we will get this weekend will be in a relatively empty Croke Park when Dublin take on Louth and we hear what the Dubs have to say about this, because that's going to be a really interesting reaction.
Yeah. All right, okay, let's get to the power rankings, because outside of what happened in Killarney, the other biggest controversy of last week was Tommy's inactivity around the power rankings and with all the Tadhg Cup action. Well, he's rectified that, let me tell you, because there's a bit to get to here. Let's see, 33 up here. And again, for audio listeners, no movement in the bottom four. It's still New York, Waterford, London. The poor, unfortunate Tipperary, you're getting no love at all. A big L drop for Limerick, it has to be said. Yeah. They're at 29. I can't see this far. Yeah. I should have my glasses on. Antrim obviously move up one. Carlo drop a couple to 27. Leitrim are at 26. And a big fall for Clare, who are having a horrendous season, really. Down to 25, is it?
Yep, yeah, 25. There we go. Yeah, thanks a million.
Let's back on to the next page. We'll deal with them all together. We'll deal with the first two pages together, if we could. Yeah, and that's Fermanagh, big leap for them. Longford, big leap. Wicklow go up to 22. Sligo, up one, Matthew, to 21. Yeah. Wexford drop a couple. Leash are at 19. Offaly go up to, it's harder to get up to two at this level is a big one.
It is.
And Down drop into the third page after losing to Offaly. Did you see the point that someone had from behind
Dylan Highland?
Oh my god,
he has no right to even be attempting that. It is the completely wrong technique, and I absolutely love it.
For people who weren't watching, he was on the sideline, basically on the 13 meter line, and he a right footed shot from the right hand side that he from the outside to boot. I kind of don't really know the angle.
Is it not? Maybe, are you right? Is it right footed? Is it not left footed from the?
It was definitely from the right hand side.
Yeah,
from the right hand side.
It's left footed from the right hand side.
Yeah. Okay, so it should have been a kind of an in step.
So it almost starts. It ends up like kind of angling wide.
Yeah.
To the near post and coming back around. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Do you know what it was? And he's coming up in my stat of the week later on, Dylan Highland. It was a Johnny Wilkinson trick shot.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that was. It was just absolutely glorious. And, you know, it was the type of shot, you know, you're on the edge of the green in the K Club, Michael, you know, you should pull out your 8-iron and do a little bump and
run.
Don't
talk to me about the K Club. You decide. What I can do with an 8-iron.
You decide to go for a little Lowry flop shop and you leave it in the water.
God. What a win for Offaly, though.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Comprehensive.
Will tried to sneak it into the hurling power rankings. It was so good.
Yeah.
Offaly are on fire at the moment, but that's a significant enough jump. They'd be, like, if you're beaten Down, you're obviously genuine contenders. They beat Clare and Ennis, which was a bit of a surprise.
Oh, on paper, they've played two of the best teams.
This is the Tadhg Cup favourites, I'd say now. Like.
Yeah, you'd have to imagine so. And Down would probably have to go back to the drawing board a bit now. I'd say they're probably struggling to get themselves up for the competition, because we know that they are a good side and they're not really doing themselves justice at the minute.
They're not. But like the Offaly, even the Offaly form lines, like you're looking at a team who went loss, 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 loss in the league. Seven defeats. They lose their first Leinster game and out of beating Clare and Down. They were ravaged by injuries throughout the league. And I had a great chat with Shane Tierney, really talented young forward, around the Leinster Championships launch. And he was just talking about how Mickey Hart was saying that this would be the making of us. And when Mickey Hart is saying that to you, you believe him. And I hope they push on, because they're such an exciting team to watch in full flow. They play great football. They're a little bit smaller than I would say the majority of intercounty teams at the minute, you know, as a whole. It'd be interesting to actually have that sort of data and be able to compare different sizes and in squads and stuff. But by God, can those boys play football, and some ferocious defenders as well. So it'd be great to see Offaly continue that rise and build on some of the successes that they've had this turn of the decade.
Is it worth mentioning some of the drops there? So like massive falls for Limerick, Clare, a couple of others.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Limerick. Yeah. Limerick have just had such a disappointing year. Obviously had a load of high points last year, but it's just sort of fallen asunder for them. And that can happen to a squad sometimes. For Clare, like, I'm kind of scratching my head looking at it, because I'm certainly well aware of a lot of the quality that's in that team, and that they should be pushing to get into Division 2 or getting close to it. Like, that's where they should be aiming. Probably, and yeah. I would have thought,
Did they not embrace the Tatchin Cup? Like, is it something that, like, because for me, I would look at that and thinking, this is how you win something. Whereas I think Clare have been hanging on because they got to a few Munster finals, but earlier on it was because they really did an unbelievable run under Colm Collins of staying in Division 2, and they were All-Ireland, you know, they were never going to win All-Ireland, but they were their level was All-Ireland Championship. And this is the first year, for various reasons, they've fallen into the Tatchin Cup. But I would have thought, right, now's your time. Yeah. Actually, you probably should have been there 2 years ago, if not 3 years ago. And it's like, right, now's your time. Go and win this thing. But they never turned up.
It was pretty much the strongest Clare team they could have picked. They had Emmett McMahon back on the bench. He'd come on and kick 4 points. Owen Cleary went off injured in the Munster final, came on. Brian McNamara, who was one of the stars of the Sigerson, is there, one of the best midfielders in Munster. They had their main team. They have all the Aroge stars that have won multiple club championship titles and competed in Munster in the last couple of years. And I don't know what it was, Mick, but it's disappointing. And you'd have to question maybe mindset. Maybe you'd have to question the mindset there, because they had all their numbers, they had all their bodies, and they fell short against a Longford team who've done really well under Mike Solon this year. Like, Longford, you know, got promoted to Division 3 and have had a couple of high points, but like, they're not picking from a huge pick there in Longford either, you know. A big result for Longford
spots.
Again.
Fermanagh went up 4 spots. They're significant rises. Fermanagh have been kind of like quietly impressive, I would say. They've really kicked on since
the league, because they struggled big time in Division 3, and then since
Fermanagh
then,
always have like a couple of lovely footballers, as well.
They do.
All right, okay, let's move on to the second page here, because, again, some movement here. Cavan, who haven't played yet, have got up a place because of Down's defeat, as of Kildare, despite their kind of limp enough loss to Galway, I would say. Flash. Derry drop one, Meath drop one after losing to Cork, Loud down one, and that's because Tyrone have gone up 3, which is a significant L jump for Tyrone. They beat Roscommon in the Hyde, as predicted here by me a couple of times, but nobody else. I've been bigging up Tyrone for a while now since that Armagh game, and nobody wanted to hear it, but still early days. Westmeath at 10 and Monaghan still at 9. So will we talk a little bit about Tyrone, because, or Tyrone, as they like to be called.
Tyrone, yeah.
I don't know why I always say Tyrone. Just, it is spelt that way.
Tyrone's like the name, isn't it?
Yeah. But, like, I don't know if we're looking at a change season here based on that performance and, like, you're taking All-Ireland. But, like, they are I just knew there was more in them than what they'd shown so far this year. And as you said, maybe they weren't going well. Maybe they were struggling with a lot of injuries. And Roscommon could have won the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not as if it was, like, you know, Tyrone showed up. But, like, these are... I'm not saying we've overrated Roscommon, but I still think on their day, Tyrone could beat anyone. Like,
I agree with you on their day. Tyrone could beat anyone, and you were right to be banging that drum for the last couple of weeks after the Armagh performance.
They were dropping down to nearly 20 at one stage. They were, but they hadn't played in 6 weeks.
Can I pull you on the line about Roscommon?
Yeah,
I don't know. Did we overrate Roscommon? Like, Roscommon are in a very competitive.
I wasn't even sure I was saying that. Like, I was just, yeah. You know, there's definitely the element of freshness there for a good few teams last week. Actually, it was interesting to see.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Both provincial winners beaten as well. John Fogarty had a piece about the amount of times the trophy is won in season and the team is beaten in the next championship game is stark over the last couple of years. So it's one to keep an eye on this weekend as Armagh and Westmead are in action. So that'll be an interesting one to see. Can they book that trend? Like, the thing about Tyrone is, lads, and we've said this about others, the amount of footballers that they develop, the amount of competitive footballers, they've got an unbelievable club championship. They've got a fantastic school system. They've got a brilliant academy system that is the envy of many. And they're able to kind of join them all together and work together with them. They've won three of the last four All-Ireland under-20 titles. And they could win four of five if they manage to beat Kerry at the weekend. Like, that is a lot of footballers coming through from under-20s level. And we know it's a little bit different than what it was pre-2018 when it moved to under-20. Players aren't as ready yet. Mm. But if you can get two or three from each of those teams, You've got completely reblooded and, you know, brought so much energy to your outfit. At the weekend, Kieran McGeary, back to his best, looked so good. I watched him hunt down Darragh Craig a couple of times and put him where he didn't want to go. It was so impressive. Seanie O'Donnell ran the game, lads. Like, at one stage in the game, the commentary made the point that Seanie O'Donnell is the only thrown forward who hasn't scored yet. He ends up scoring, but by God, he was making everything take. A little bit like Shane O'Donnell is for Donegal when he's at his best. And then Owen McElhone, The dynamite, the dynamism. Like, just even the manner in which, and I've had a lot of Roscommon fans send me this brilliant behind-the-goals slow-mo footage of the very last free, just after Paul Carey levels the game, we think it's going to extra time. McElhone dances inside Senan Lamb. And I just want to mention Senan Lamb, who's been absolutely brilliant. He made three full-length blocks in that game, stopped a number of points, but he gets stung for that final free at the end. I didn't realise how badly he got stung. But Mick, like, Lamb just makes the mistake of leaving the handout, and McElhone wraps his arm around him and pulls him to the ground, and the referee buys it hook, line and sinker.
Yeah, it's clever.
And it's the free in. But, like, again, it's there to be done too. And we're always flirting with these lines in football and in hurling. So a huge win for Tyrone. And I don't know how much more we can say about it. Roscommon, very unlucky. I would say similar to Meade. We're not going to say a huge amount about Meade here. Meade should have been done and dusted at half-time in that game. Their decision-making after O'Callaghan's red card was deplorable. Like, and Paddy, I thought, was, look, he called it as it was. He said it was Division 2 football in Porky Rin. And
well, if that's Division 2 football, I want to see more of it.
Yeah, it was very enjoyable game. Like, yeah, it really was. And up until Meade pulled away at the start of before half time, It was a cracker. It was game of the season. And then it looked over, and I was saying this to Tommy yesterday. Yeah. I kind of, like, it was a long day of sport on Saturday.
Oh,
This was the second game, and I had nothing left for Galway and Kildare. Yeah. But by the second game, it's like I was kind of like, I had other things to do, but I left the match on. But it was on silent on the TV. So I was kind of wondering, and it's like half time came and went and I hadn't gone back to it yet, and then suddenly I turned around and Cork were back in it. They were a point down or something, and that was before the red card, and then you're like, alright, the red card's ruined it. But actually, from that point on, I thought it was more intriguing than thrilling.
Yeah,
in the second half. The first half was up and down.
It was, and that's the thing as well, because I personally would associate this Cork team with scoring a lot of goals. They gun down on goal and they try, and that's their approach, and that's what they did in the first half, and they could have easily had four within the first 15-20 minutes, and the game was tight. Meade obviously then pulled away, but I think John Cleary does deserve a good bit of credit there, because in the second half, that kind of head down, let's go for these goals, that kind of went out the window a little bit, and they resorted to their 2-point attempts, and they've got a serious amount of footballers who can kick those 2-pointers. Like, Stephen Sherlock, I kicked, what, about 14 points
Sherlock
at the weekend.
Was unreal. And you have to think as well, like, if Brian Hurley is getting fitter, exactly, and they're able to bring him on for 15 minutes at the end of games, he'll get two of them every time, like, you know. And
Chris Oak-Jones wasn't on it at the weekend either.
Yeah.
And he's someone who we know when he is on, he can rattle up a serious amount of scores. And then their kickouts too is another aspect. I know we kind of always talk about kickouts, but Pat Doyle was on fire there towards the end of the game. he had one real big mistake where you thought, okay, Meath are actually going to level this one up, and I don't think they did in the end. They dropped short or whatever. But he was excellent too, and he had a red card. I mean, I don't want to spend a whole another half an hour talking about referee decisions. But and then as well as that, he could feel so hard done by. Immediately after, Meath played one in long, and Brian O'Driscoll's there on the edge of the square, and he kind of sticks his hands out, and he catches whoever it is behind him, a slip of mind exactly who it is behind him, and the ref gives him a yellow card. And I'm kind of thinking, it's the same incident, basically. Yeah. You know, it's not an intentional sort of swipe but it's happened, so I don't know. But no, they did really well. They showed a lot of steel, and there are different animals down there in Porky Rin as well.
Yeah, and I think steel is a good word, because that's what they didn't show in the Munster final, and that's why we were disappointed in them, and that's why, Tommy, you kind of like laced them, really, because they didn't show any. And in fairness, I do think Meath had a huge part to play playing 15 versus 14 and not doing it well, and giving Cork those opportunities. When you have the extra man, you'd be really disappointed in that, you know, biases aside. But I have to say, given the red card was seemingly so unjust anyway, I have to say I was happy to see Cork stick with it and win it and show that bit of brittle, you know, at the end of the game. And actually, you know, I think that launches them. But you weren't just overly kind of enamoured with the overall quality, I suppose.
Maybe I didn't give Jason Foley enough credit for the job he did on Stephen Sherlock and the manner in which he put him where he didn't want to go. And like, I just thought Cork, it was there for them. It was such an opportunity that Kerry were vulnerable and that they should have put the foot in the throat. But like, Cork showed us what they're made of in that second half. And what a smart decision, like, to be aware of what you need as a team. And I've made this point a good few times, like, to know your strengths and your weaknesses is such a big thing. And to know that playing that game in Porky Rin was the right decision for Cork football.
Absolutely. Was smart. I was going to say it, really great.
And sometimes counties get in their own way, but the Cork footballers made the right decision. And Michael, I know you were saying that you had the game on and you could hear the noise, like the noise in Parky Rin, like, you know, when the comeback started, like the noise is absolutely off the charts. And like, that's what we want from Championship. We want it to be enclosed. We want the atmosphere to be off the charts. But like, just to mention, I'm going to get to it in my stat of the week.
Let's do the stat of the week now, actually, if we can, because before we get to page one. So this is Harvey Norman's stat of the week, and you're going for sharpshooters, which I don't know any more than that.
I just want to pay a little bit of credit to some of the scoring exploits of the weekend. And we already mentioned, you know, Dylan Hyland and that glorious Johnny Wilkinson trick shot at the weekend. Hyland scored 111 this weekend for Offaly, right? 1-9 from play. 1-3-5 if you break it down as two-pointers, goals and points. Offaly and Raheem Clubman. Stephen Sherlock of Finbars and Cork kicked 14 points, 0-4-6 if you break it down that way. 4 2-pointers, 2 2-point frees in it. Like, the two-pointer he scores, lads. There's 2 points he scores in the 45th minute. The one where he brings it back to a point and he drops it like that onto his right foot. It's like a volley. Mm. It's unbelievable. And seconds later, Meade allow him to do the same thing from the same area. Like, it's criminal defending, it's genius. No, this is the inside. This is the instep, I think, at this stage. It's just genius football. And like, I watched Sherlock up close in one of the greatest performances I've ever seen in club football, and fallen short at the end by the most clutch Dingle moment for the Bears and the Dingle semi-final in Semple, or Munster final in Semple earlier this year. It was absolutely incredible to watch. And it just got me thinking, who would score the most in Championship? I was talking about something similar recently, and I asked you about the top goal scorer currently playing in Championship football, and do you remember who it was?
Killian O'Connor.
Anyone know who holds the record for the most ever scored in a senior football Championship game?
Oh, I don't have it off the top of my head, but I know
it was about five, six years ago, wasn't it?
Seen it, because is it him again?
There, I thought you were going to be kicking yourself. Kieran O'Connor, 4-9.
Because I remember Luke Loughlin there in the Talton Cup a year or two ago scored 117 against Antrim in Mullingar, obviously under the 2-point rules or whatever, and that one was just ahead of it, obviously, the point he was at.
I think Loughlin's the closest we've got in Championship. In league football, James Nocton from Limerick scored 4-12 last year. But just in Championship, I just wonder, would it be
beaten? I think somebody got, I think maybe, yeah.
Yeah. I just wonder, would it be beaten?
I think got 4-7 one time, but I think, I think it's...
Could have been 3-8. Sherlock, 14 points. Hyland, 111. Rob Finnerty scores 1-9 at the weekend, lads. And like, I just want to talk about it for a split second. First point, dummy on the left, point on the right, 20 seconds gone. Second point, 4 minutes gone, on the loop, point off the left. The third point, 9 minutes. Shane Walsh sells a screen and gets away with it. Finnerty off the left. The fourth point, a long kick pass in from Dylan McHugh. He turns and he sells the man the wrong way into space off the left again. The fifth point, he uses a hop dummy and he whips this one over with his left. Second half starts in the 36th minute with Finnerty selling the most sumptuous solo dummy from 50 yards out. Like, bought hook, line and sinker. Puts it over with the outside of the left for a two-pointer. Then he gets a goal. He palms it at the back post after a brilliant move up the field. And then later on, another savage two-pointer off the left. Finnerty just proven at the very start of the game that he has a right foot and then going on to use his left foot for the rest. It was just like, it was just the way he scored, how he did it, it was class. And it just showed the amount of different ways you can skin a cat or kick a point in Gaelic football.
His post-match interview was great as well, because he clearly didn't have too much of an idea of how much he had actually scored. He was like, I didn't realise it was that much, but you know, he's phenomenal. Class. He was phenomenal.
Yeah,
he's letting the hair grow. He's looking like the father.
I'm actually
don't go full mullet, Rob. That's what you'll tell him if you're catching up with him. Yeah.
Yeah, and then just to mention very briefly, so Finnerty obviously Saltail and Galway, Shamrock Gaels and Sligo Star League Dignan kicked 11 points from play at the weekend too. Dylan Farrell from Longford and St. Bridget's Killeshee with 1-7. And Paul Honeyman, young Leitrim footballer from Sean O'Heslin's with 9 points too. Just brilliant scoring exploits, stat of the week, five fellas who shot the lights out from the 12 games at the weekend.
Lovely. Right, before we get to page one, I just want to remind everybody, right, last week, number one on the power rankings were Kerry. Number two, Ulster champions Armagh. Number three, Donegal. Number four, Roscommon. Number five, Galway. Let's have a quick look and see what's happened since. Well, there we go. I'm going to start at the top for audio listeners this time, and it is up to Donegal. Number one in Tommy Rooney's Gaelic football power rankings. Number two remains Armagh. Kerry have dropped two places to number three after their third hammering by Donegal this year. Galway are number four, up one. Roscommon lost, Galway won. Fair enough. They were close anyway. Mayo six still. Cork overtake Dublin into seventh. Dublin in eighth. Right, Tommy, you went for Donegal. Was this a hard decision?
No, that was awesome at the weekend. Everything about it. And I know we all got distracted after the game, you know, unfortunately so, with the circus. But, like, what a performance. What a way to go down to the All-Ireland champions and give them a record their feet in their backyard. Like, I think we were robbed of one of the greatest games of Gaelic football under the new rules because of Micheál Burns' decision to get a red card and get sent off. Like, the... And I just want to make 2 points. Donegal were exemplary in the way that they killed that game in the second half. I thought Kerry were pathetic in the manner in which they couldn't get at them at all. I understand the reasons for it. They were lacking so much speed. They're lacking their entire half-back line or half-forward like power in Joe O'Connor, Gavin White, Breena Beaglioc, Sean O'Shea. Like, to get out, even if you're 15 on 15, you need speed in Gaelic football to get up the field. You need gears. And Kerry just couldn't get out. Couldn't lay a glove on them. But Donegal were just so good. The job that Rorty did on Paddy Clifford, like, he tortured him. Clifford could have had two goals in the first half, Paddy, if you look at it. He had two big chances. But Rorty was on him aggressively throughout the game. McCall on Clifford, David Clifford did a really good job as well. McGonagall was always there and involved, as you could see by McGonagall and Clifford clashing a couple of times themselves. Just brilliant stuff. And Kieran Moore, phenomenal. Oisin Gallen on form. Michael Murphy did what he had to do. Michael Langan back to his imperious best after missing the down game and perhaps giving us a performance that he rarely has in him in the All-Ireland final last year. We didn't see anything from Langan. And just so impressive, lads. I don't know what you thought of it. I thought there was moments from Kerry that were really impressive, but they need their bodies back if they're going to climb back up the steps of the Hogan Stand this year, because they are missing a lot of really important players. And in saying that, I think if it's 15 on 15 and Kerry have the wind, I didn't think that 5 points at halftime was going to be enough.
Yeah, but I don't know if Donegal seemed to have a plan. I think they still would have played that way anyway. You know what I mean? I know what you're saying. When's Shane Ryan back? Because I think that's the most under-talked about thing in all of the Kerry injuries, is that, like, how he's developed into what they do. It's not to be kind of like disparaging about his replacement or anything like that, but Kerry really need him back. Like, we're talking, yeah. Do you know what I mean? There's other goalkeepers that get more attention, but I don't know if there's any more important at the moment. Like,
Yeah, it's huge. And you're right, it has gone under the radar, and we talk about all the others, but Shane Ryan's ability to kick out off both feet, to beat a press, but also, lads, Shane Ryan has connections with certain players as well, and Brino Bioglic, Paul Murphy have always been Shane Ryan's get out of jail cards. You know, Rapmore connection with Paul Murphy, Obioglik. You think back to like Sean O'Shea's free against Dublin in the All Ireland semi-final in 22. It's a draw game. The Dubs have a big squeeze on. They're looking for the winning point, and Ryan finds Obioglik, who finds Murphy, who finds David Clifford, who's fouled, and Sean O'Shea puts it over. The only reason they won that game and they won that All-Ireland was Shane Ryan's ability to find Brian Obioglik and the hard run Obioglik made. There's so many important players missing for Kerry, but that is not to take away from how good Donegal were.
No, it doesn't.
And how, poor I think Kerry actually dealt with some of the second half. I just thought it was very poor.
Very quickly, where do you think the most accurate reading of where both these two teams are at? Is it last year's All-Ireland final? Is the league final? Or is it what we saw at the weekend?
But could I just ask another question on top of that? Because I think that's a really important one. Like, have Donegal figured out Kerry? Because, like, Donegal's performances elsewhere this year, including losing an Ulster quarter-final to Down, haven't matched what they've done against Kerry in all three games. Like, the league final was arguably even more impressive than what they did
on Saturday.
Yeah. Kerry shot themselves. Well, considering it's in Killarney in the championship. You know what I mean? And they were leading, and I played very, very well in the first half. Like, but even so, I still think the league final more impressive. It's like they have answered what happened to them in the All-Ireland final in no uncertain terms. Like, you kind of think if they play again, it'd be hard to see Kerry beating them. At the same time, I think Kerry could be more likely All-Ireland winners than Donegal.
There's McGuinness's entire press conference is so interesting, right? And nobody is going to hear much more of it, given the manner in which the back and forth went. He has this brilliant line about the form book in Gaelic football. Forget about it. Like, just forget about form books. There's not 10 points between Kerry and Donegal. There wasn't last July. There wasn't 13 points between them in the league final this year. And there isn't 10 points between them off the weekend when they're both at their best and they're both on it. But how on earth could anybody say that Donegal aren't going to be favourites the next time they meet, regardless of who Kerry have back?
Form is important, like, but matchups are.
Matchups are, and like, have they figured them out? It's hard to say, have they figured them out? Because Kerry only had half of their All-Ireland final winning team, or a little bit more. I think they ended up with 9 on the field at the weekend. It's hard to say, have they figured them out? But have they answered the questions we had of them after last July? Resoundingly, yes. Like, absolutely. Have they gone to another level? Yes. Was that one of the most impressive performances, you know, under the new rules? Elements of it, yeah, absolutely. Elements of it were. But, like, Kerry break, like, Donegal for, like, 5 minutes in that first half, between the 7 and the 12 minute, and they get 4 points in the spin. Kerry's kick-out press, I made this point on the pod, a lot of club teams would be looking at what Kerry did there, how they owned their boxes, how they had 5 in the full forward line, how they ate them alive and forced Mulroney into doing things he didn't want to do. That was like a masterclass, like they did against Armagh last year. So, like, it's hard to get too excited over it, because we had no second half. The second half was, unfortunately, a done deal. Yeah. But, Jesus, it was very good.
Last question, we have to go. How much do Armagh have to win by this weekend to bump Donegal off? 20
they
points.
They won't bump Donegal off this weekend. Sorry to spoil
it. They were below
them
last week. For all Armagh can't do integrate. They're just doing the second place.
And they were below them because
they haven't played Kerry.
We hadn't seen Donegal since they lost to Down, who are where now, you know? Like, it's draw a line, forget about the form book. I'm going to clip that McGuinness line and put it out for you, don't worry.
Forget about the form book. Right, that's all we have time for. The GA power rankings based entirely on the form book, and we will see you next week.
You've loads of tickets to give away.
The power rankings on Off the Ball with Harvey Norman, official stats sponsor of the GAA.